Welcome to Dream University's Dream Talks, a series of conversations and interviews with thought leaders in the dream movement. Sit back, relax, and learn.
Okay, so moving on to fabulous, interesting, and exciting things, Rhonda Britton. And Rhonda, am I saying your last name right?
You are, Rhonda Britton. That's me.
Rhonda Britton is the founder of the Fabulous, it's not actually called that, is the founder of the Fearless Living Institute. I just was calling it the Fabulous Fearless.
I'll take it, the FFLI.
FFLI. My dream coaches have gone on to do Rhonda's work, or sometimes vice versa. They'll find me after doing some of Rhonda's work, and I know the work that Rhonda's doing in the world is making a huge, huge difference. And she basically, the Fearless Living Institute is featuring the world's premier life coach training program. Rhonda herself is the author of 4 national bestsellers and was the life coach on the Emmy award-winning daytime reality drama. I know some of you know this, Starting Over for
That's
all
right.
3 seasons.
That's
She's
right.
been called America's favorite life coach. I love that. And was named Starting Over's most valuable player by the New York Times. She's a globally recognized expert on the subject of fear and fearlessness. I know you're going to have questions for her at the end of this. She's written several national bestsellers based on her principles, including Fearless Living, which has been translated into 12 languages, Fearless Loving, which I have some questions about, and Change Your Life in 30 Days. Her latest book is Do I Look Fat in This? Get Over Your Body and On with Your Life. And it's really designed to alter the way we see and our relationship to our body. In addition to her work on Starting Over, she's made a difference in the United Kingdom for 2 seasons. Rhonda has changed people's lives in 30 days on the reality television show Help Me Rhonda. What a great name! Love it. With 2 television shows on 2 continents, she's shifting the way the world understands fear and helping millions to transform their lives. And a respective life strategist, Rhonda is inspired and inspiring with a pinpoint ability to see through to the core of the issues at hand. And let me tell you, she pulls no punches. She calls them like she sees them. It is her instinct and intuition honed over years of coaching private clients through teleclasses and on her television programs that really sets her work apart. Her spirit and delivery are impeccably delivered in a no-nonsense manner, resulting in maximum results. She is adept at creating dynamic, action-oriented exercises designed to complement her simple yet sophisticated Wheel of Fear and Wheel of Freedom models upon which her work is based. And I was really touched that you shared this in your bio because this is the personal behind the scenes. Rhonda's passion for overcoming emotional fears was born of her own personal tragedy. She became an orphan at 14. And she was the only witness to her parents' murder-suicide. In overcoming the legacy of this terrifying, life-stopping experience, Rhonda developed the principles and resources that she would later use to heal herself and so many others. And she's taken this work into all kinds of corporations as well. But you know, but for me, Rhonda, it really is your heart, your spirit, your truth, and your integrity. For me, that is what's most inspiring. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcia. That's very kind of you.
It means
a lot to me.
Together, but we had an immediate affinity.
Yes. We're soul sisters.
And, you know, we were able to roll our eyes at the things that were driving us crazy and maintain a sense of humor. So let's start there. You know, I don't have formal questions. What I love about these conversations is it's really, from my perspective, it's a high-level dialogue between 2 visionaries where our community gets to listen in. And so let's just roll with it.
Yes, please.
You know, and feel free to take this in whatever direction you want to make sure you get the points in that you want to.
Fabulous.
So, Rhonda, I want to know how, in the midst of tragedy, you developed such an extraordinary sense of humor.
Well, you know, what's really funny, Marcia, is I didn't even know I was funny.
Very funny.
No, I was told in my teens and my 20s, I remember my 20s, people just going, oh, you're so funny, oh, you're so creative. And I literally, Marcia, would fight them and go, I'm not funny, I'm not creative, I can't do that. And I literally remember, I would fight for my limitations and I would fight for my opinion of myself rather than really owning what they saw. And one of the things that I talk about in Fearless Living is, you know, sometimes other people's opinions of you are the right ones, usually more than your own opinions of yourself. So I was actually waitressing, and one of my friends, I used to work Monday nights at Tony Roma's in Los Angeles, California, and they used to have an open mic night. And my waitress and bartender buddies would be like, you get up there and do open mic. And I'd be like, I'm not funny. Didn't I tell you for the last 3 years I'm not funny? And bottom line is they just egged me on so much that I basically started doing stand-up comedy and improv to kind of prove them wrong. And in actuality, I proved myself wrong. People actually laughed at me.
This is amazing. How long did you do stand-up?
I did stand-up for probably, oh gosh, only 6 months, 9 months. It really wasn't the lifestyle for me. And I did improv for several years, though. And
isn't it amazing how life will give us everything that we need in order to become who we're destined to be?
Oh, Marcia, you took the words out of my mouth.
Please.
I tell people that every single day. Here I am, a waitress, you know, at 29 years old, 30 years old, and, you know, people look at me and go, oh, the loser, Rhonda, waitressing, you know, and here I was doing stand-up and improv and doing all these things. And bottom line is, I always say, you know, God always jokes. He's like, okay, Rhonda G, you know, you're supposed to change the world regarding fear, but that'll freak you out. So let's see, what can I have you do? What can I have you do to prepare for that? Let's see. Okay, wait, how about I have you be an actress, improv, you know, comedian, because that'll give you the skills, and oh, by the way, you'll discover that it's not for you, and you'll be devastated and depressed, which will allow you to get really deep into your own heal your own wound, which will then give you the courage.
I love it. I often say that the appropriate response to loss is grief. And
yes.
Wherever we won't grieve, we tend to cut off from
yes.
our passion or our life force. Can you
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about,
Absolutely.
You know, because who hasn't experienced what you're talking about? Disappointment,
Absolutely.
Despair, setbacks, loss.
Absolutely. The people who haven't experienced them are the ones that you're talking about that cut it off. You know, and try to be brave and try to suck it up. I mean, I grew up in Upper Michigan and Upper Minnesota. I'm from a Finnish and Swedish family and raised Lutheran. So, if anybody knows anything about the Finnish people, and, you know, plenty of people have done studies on them, we learn to suck it up. You know, there's no, like, you know, the joke in my family is you cut off your leg, you cut off your arm, you know, you're in a car accident, my mom and dad or my grandparents would look at me and go, so what's your problem? Get up and start walking. I mean, there was no level of time for emotions or feelings or, you know, hugs or any of that. It was like, just suck it up and let's go. So, you know, it's an amazing thing for me to watch people now. You know, here I was one of those people that learned to suck it up and learned to just cut it off. And, you know, I spent the last, you know, 20 plus 30 years of my life actually learning to not, you know, cut it off, but actually to support whatever process I was going through. And, you know, you said it, Marcia. I mean, when you cut off your grief, when you cut off your loss, you cut off all permission to have passion. You cut off all permission to be authentically you. Cut off all permission to actually have an experience of who you're meant to be. Instead, you start conforming and creating, you know, that level of people-pleasing or dependency because you don't have a right to grief and have loss, so therefore you don't have a right to be you. You don't have a right to have feelings.
It's incredible. So it's almost like wherever we say no to something, we're saying no to everything.
Yes, yes, yes.
Something about, well, as I'm picturing as you're talking, it's something about keeping life out. You know, people say, oh, don't hurt me, but why can't I feel anything?
Or, exactly.
You know, or,
exactly.
You know.
I don't want to be, I love when people, because, you know, people come to me just like they come to you. They come to you for passion and purpose. They come to me for, you know, for finding meaning and finding, you know, light or love or you know, also purpose and passion at times. And, you know, they come because they really, really believe, and you know this, you know, more than anyone, they really, really believe that living the way they should will give them happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both know that.
What do you find about that should?
Yes, 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 that lovely should. You know, if we could eliminate one word in the English language, it would be should.
You know, I think, tell us a little bit about how the Fearless Living Institute was born as a dream and as a creative process.
Sure. I mean, I think sometimes, and I know this, you've experienced it so many times yourself, Marcia, so I know I'm preaching to the choir here or talking to the choir, is, you know, Fearless Living really came unexpectedly. It was never planned for, never wanted it, you know, never really I think so many times people's dreams or their passions come unexpectedly, and because it doesn't look like it's supposed to, or the package they thought it should, even though they didn't really have a thought of it, it shouldn't be that package. I mean, okay, maybe I didn't have a package. You know, maybe I didn't know it was going to come in pink, but I definitely didn't want green, and this is coming in green, and I don't even like green. So, you know, Fearless Living came because when I healed my life, when I started healing my life, and I started having my own experience of a new Rhonda after I created the exercises that really make up Fearless Living, out of my own need to survive and my own need to, to thrive, my own healing.
What was going on in your life back then that had you feel that way?
Well, you know, I mean, after my parents died, it really took me 20 years to move to a place of being willing to mourn their loss. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of us, our parents die, our children die, our spouses die, our sisters die, our brothers die, and let alone forget jobs that die, school careers that die, and all those dreams that die. You know, in even the moment the boy likes you in school and, you know, he doesn't, that dream died. And we take all that death and we don't process it. We don't mourn it. We don't feel it. We don't acknowledge it. We just ignore it. And so, and that's normal. It's normal not to process it right away until you have a relationship and a level of foundation underneath you to do that. And I didn't do it for 20 years. And 20 years later, here I am, after trying to kill myself three times, after using alcohol, after using men, after doing anything I could to avoid it, I was left alone with my own loss and had to face the fact that I had to heal myself. Therapy was nice, but it wasn't effective. For me personally, it wasn't effective in the way that I wanted it to be effective. It definitely helped me, don't get me wrong. And, you know, books I read and classes I took, nothing got me over the hump. Nothing changed my life. Everything was like, yeah, that's interesting. Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. And it gave me insights or revelations, but it didn't change anything. So I started creating my own processes for myself out of sheer desperation. And people started recognizing the change in me and started approaching me and going, oh, what are you doing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not doing, well, what are you doing? You're like, you know, you're different. I'm like, huh? I mean, because again, I wasn't like, I am now going to be different. My life is now changed.
And let me also say that when you and I started out as coaches, nobody knew what a bloody coach was.
Right, right. You and I started out so long ago that ICF wasn't even formed back then.
It wasn't like there were trainings and certifications.
Right.
Because you, I also had to sit down and go, okay, what is it I do? And,
yes.
You know, and how does this work? And
yes.
Interview like 1,000 people and try
yes.
to look for patterns. And,
yes.
You know, so please continue on because it's a
yes.
great story.
Yes. So I just, out of people asking me what I did, I started sharing what I did because they kept bugging me. And again, nothing I thought I wanted to share. And it worked for them. They would come back to me and go, oh my gosh, this is changing my life. This is amazing. And my sister, I want her to talk to you and I want my brother to blow. And based on that, first step I took was I ran a grief group with a therapist and, I'd never shared my story before and I shared my story for the first time in this grief group. And through that, I just, you know, people, I started having classes in my house and people started calling me and I started working with a life coach, you know, way back then and, apprenticed under him and, you know, he was my mentor and really supported me to put a context into what I was doing, like create a container for it. And, you know, the Fearless Living Institute really came out of other people's desires to share what I was supporting them with. That's why I wrote Fearless Living, my first book. They'd be like, my cousin in New York, I want to share it, but you're not teaching. Would you please write a book? And I've just always answered the call, you know.
Rhonda, what was one of the first processes that you used? If you can give us kind of a
little. Oh, sure. I can tell you exactly the very first one.
Let me say this. When it comes to making your dreams come true, the two biggest obstacles are fear and doubt.
Yes.
And to really, for me to be able to have a colleague and a kindred spirit who is an expert in helping us to become more fearless or to
yes.
deal with our fear,
yes.
you're an answer to my prayers.
Yes.
So we want to milk you for everything we can.
Absolutely. And you and I both know that doubt is a function of fear.
Yes.
You know, and doubt is a wonderful, expansive experience once you start understanding the relationship that you can have with doubt, and doubt actually becomes a place that we, you know, just double check ourselves and just double check where we're walking. It doesn't have to stop us. But you and I both know that people don't have that definition of doubt, and they don't understand doubt, and they don't see that doubt.
The enemy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also believe and teach that if it's part of you, it's got wisdom and insight,
yes.
And if you can actually get in there and hear it, it's going to give you some really valuable information.
Absolutely. And you know, fear is the same. You know, the definition of fear that I use is fear is an affirmation of your growth. And
I love that. Say it again.
Fear is an affirmation of your growth.
That is so powerful. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you know, you would not be afraid. And again, most of us, as you and I both know, don't even know they're afraid. They just think, oh, it's a bad idea, and I'm just not sure it's the right thing, and it's going to cost a lot of money. And they just use their complaining and their excuses and their blaming and their shaming, and they don't understand that all equals fear. And so one thing that I do is just help people understand that fear is the culprit here. It's not that there's anything wrong out there. It's in you, buddy, old pal, friend, old, you know, good gal that you are. And fear is just an affirmation of growth. You would not be afraid. You would not be coming up with complaints. You would not be coming up with excuses unless your soul was calling you to move forward like that. I mean, like, it is calling you big time. And your wheel of fear, what I call the wheel of fear, is all about safety. And you and I both know that safety does not allow us to go for our dreams. Safety does not allow us to, you know, experience our authentic nature. Safety is not a place for, you know, people that really want to live passionate lives. That's not, you know, again, I'm not talking about physical safety. I'm talking about emotional safety, interpersonal safety, you know, that intimacy, that connection to ourselves. So that level of safety is what the wheel of fear uses, and it gives us permission to complain and make excuses.
Tell us a little bit more about the wheel and how it works.
Sure, absolutely. The wheel of fear is, you know, my basic philosophy is that, again, fear is an affirmation of your growth. And, you know, you don't have 10 problems or 20 problems. You just have one problem, and it's really an opportunity, and that's called your wheel of fear. And the wheel of fear has four components. And the first component is your trigger. And what I mean by that is there is something that people say, the way they look at you, there's some smell. It doesn't even have to be tangible. It doesn't even have to be conscious. But you know this to the core of your being. Every cell of your body knows this, that the minute it comes up, you start making up excuses, you start, you know, dancing, you start people-pleasing, you start doing the thing you do, which is called your fear responses. And there are basically, everybody has a different wheel of fear. And you have to find your particular one, and it falls under 10 different words, so to speak, to make it simple and clear. You know, you might have a fear of looking stupid, a fear of inadequacy, a fear of being a loser, a fear of being invisible. So those are just, you know, those are just some of the fear of being unlovable. So those are some of the fears that we talk about in the Wheel of Fear. And those fears, which is, you know, that trigger thought, give us permission, and this is what I always find fascinating, because one of the things I work diligently with my clients, with my coaches and their clients, is to help people understand their process. Because once you have a relationship with fear, it'll only work for you, it will never work against you again. So I help people understand that that trigger is so fast, so unconscious, so quick, that you're into your fear responses long before, you know, you even took a breath. And those fear responses look like people-pleasing, overeating, oversleeping, undersleeping, you know, the excuses, the complaints, anything you do when you're on your quote-unquote wheel of fear. And we all know those things we do. We all know what we do. We know if we overeat. We know if we under-exercise. We know if we, you know, talk bad about ourselves. It's all that negative self-talk we do is all fear responses. And the fear responses exist for one reason and one reason only. So you do not have to feel the feeling, which is the third component of the wheel of fear, which is the feeling that you don't want to experience at all costs. And that feeling is your core negative feeling. And that is the thing you fear you are the most. And that feeling, I'm going to just use mine for example.
Oh,
my great. My trigger is loser. So, you know, if Marcia's sitting there on the phone and maybe, you know, she takes a break and goes, oh, that's nice, Rhonda. Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, you know, I'm like, you know, if I was on my wheel of fear, I'd be like, you know, and
what
I'd be dancing
about me, and therefore yeah. It must mean I'm a loser.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not even conscious, don't even know it. So if your father called you stupid your whole life, trust me, your trigger isn't stupid. It's not that evident. It is tricky, and it is insidious, and it is slimy.
And if people pick up your book, does that help them find theirs?
Absolutely. Picking up Fearless Living will explain the wheels and give you tools on how to do that. But again, you know, if you're uncertain, if you're not sure, definitely call a private coach or attend the Fearless Foundation Weekend. The Fearless Foundation Weekend is Fearless Living Come to Life. And many
people. Those?
Excuse me?
Do you lead those weekends?
I do sometimes. I led some last year. This year I'm not leading some, but you can always look at the schedule and see who's leading. But I do lead sometimes. I lead two workshops a year. One is called the Wheels Workshop that you have to attend the Fearless Foundation Weekend before. So the Fearless Foundation Weekend is, you know, the crux of it all, kind of get down and dirty, do the interactive, really discover your wheel of freedom and your wheel of fear. And then the Wheels Weekend is an extension of that, and you go deeper and have a much more conscious relationship with your wheel of fear and wheel of freedom. And I always teach that every year.
Rhonda, when you talk about changing your life in 30 days, can people change their relationship to their fear in 30 days?
Absolutely.
So I'm sure it must begin with, at some level, catching yourself in the act.
Absolutely. And this is the difference between Fearless Living and Change Your Life, because people ask me all the time, well, which book should I read first, you know? And I always say Fearless Living is a theory. It's going to give you your wheel of fear, give you your wheel of freedom, because that's what we teach, how to jump off your wheel of fear onto your wheel of freedom, which will, again, support you and your work, Marcia, you know, jumping on there, you know, finding their dream and finding their passion.
Mm-hmm.
The Change Your Life is 30 days of tools. And, you know, when I'm ever working with coaches or therapists, you know, counselors of any sort, any professionals who support people in any way, Change Your Life is chock full. Every single chapter is a tool. And so it's literally a toolbox. So Change Your Life in 30 days is the tools. Fearless Living is the foundation, is the philosophy, you know, is the mythology. And those two things together create the pathway of fearless living.
Rhonda, you've worked with thousands of people all
yes.
over the world. Do you see any common threads?
They're all afraid.
You know, like at the pattern level.
Well, that's why I came up with the 10, you know, basic wheel of fear definitions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might have a different trigger than me, or you might have a different core negative feeling than me, and you're definitely going to have different fear responses and different self-destructive behaviors, because the wheel of fear has four components. So it's individualized in that way. But that's one of the reasons that I created 10 trigger words and 10 core negative feeling words, because there are patterns. There are patterns, absolutely. Fear of rejection. You know, a fear of being unlovable, fear of being, you know, incompetent and inadequate, fear of being invisible. You know, those are very, very, very common thread. And I don't care if you are in Australia, in Scotland, or in America, there is a underlying desire for human beings to belong and connect. And these fears give us permission to go to safety first rather than to connect and belong.
Oh, so we'll stay in our own little private Idaho rather than reach out and fear rejection.
Yes. And or fear that we're unlovable, or be visible versus invisible, or having to face other people's, you know, thinking we're inadequate. You know, as long as
variations of fear that I've even thought about.
Yeah. I've got many more, Marcia, many more.
What are you afraid of?
Well, my wheel of fear is loser and worthless. So, you know, if I kind of, you know, if I ever feel quote-unquote stuck, or if I ever feel, you know, that I'm hesitant to go towards a feeling, you know, because one of the things I talk about in Starting Over all the time when I was on Starting Over is the feeling you're afraid to feel is running your life. And so, you know, that feeling, if you can't feel it, is being stopped by fear. So, you know, if I'm ever seeing that I'm stopping a feeling, or if I'm ever not taking that risk of where, you know, where I want to go, what I want to do, whatever's calling me forth, then I go, okay, how does this trace back to loser? Where am I afraid to be seen that way? And I have to risk that. And I have to be willing to fear worthless in the process. Because again, most people just want to feel good as they find their passion and their dreams.
So one of the things I hear you saying is that it's really about turning toward the thing that you most want to turn away from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about this in our coaching certification as well, that, you know, if it's just about the love and light side of coaching, you're not serving your clients.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the coaches just want people to have positive projections and bonded to them.
Those are mediocre coaches.
Are going to take their client into
yes.
kind of the icky stickies. And do you find that just in general, you know, coaches often don't name the pink elephant?
Absolutely. I think, you know, coaching is a lot like real estate or therapy or, you know, any profession that's really based on a group of independent individuals, you know, and having an entrepreneurial mindset, you know, network marketers, whatever those groups are, real estate agents. You know, 60, I would even say 70% are mediocre at best. And they're really just asking the questions they're taught to ask because they have no sense of trust and faith in themselves, and they don't really hear their own intuition, and they have never really done the process for themselves except at a very superficial level. And they're self-help junkies that just want to do the work for other people and make money at it, but yet they haven't done the work themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's probably, you know, let's just say that's 70%, and then let's say another 20% are good. You know, they're good. They've done good work, and they've asked hard questions, and you know, and they've gone to that next level of real expansion and not afraid to go to those dark places. And then there's the next, you know, there's the 5% that are incredibly great and magical that, you know, they completely trust themselves and they completely trust their intuition and they completely talk to you at a very different level, at a very soul level that you don't even know how they know what they know. And I think that's true for most professions. And so most coaches are mediocre at best, doing good work. You know, they ask questions that are like, you know, maybe nobody's asked somebody that question before, and so that client is like, wow, I've never been asked that. It's an amazing question, you know. But you and I both know that until you get to that, you know, that 5% of really following your intuition, you're not masterful.
And if you haven't spent the dark night of the soul with yourself.
More than once. How about dark years, Marcia?
Whatever we can't be with in ourselves, we can't be with in anyone else.
That's right.
I think you and I are very aligned in our philosophies. We talk a lot about the big three limiting beliefs, scarcity, inadequacy, you know, scarcity, not enough time, not enough money, not enough
yeah.
me to go around, inadequacy, I'm not blank enough,
yes,
you know,
yes.
anything, and then trust
yes.
as really a core skill. And what I believe is that, you know, in order to dream big dreams, you need to be willing to take risks, and in
yes.
order to take risks, you need to trust yourself. But
yes.
most of us don't.
Yeah, absolutely. Why would they trust the wheel of fear? Because remember, most people are operating from their wheel of fear. And so why would they trust their wheel of fear? They don't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know the difference. And so one of the things on their wheel of freedom, the wheel of freedom has four components as well, and one is the essential nature, and trust is one of our essential natures.
Well, wait, I have to bounce back. So how do I jump from the wheel of fear to the wheel of freedom?
Ah, well, that's when you get to know your essential nature. So my essential nature is authenticity. And my wholeness, because it's authenticity, and then it's productive behaviors, and then it's wholeness. And my wholeness is self-acceptance. So at the end of the day, I'm in freedom when I'm accepting myself. And when I accept myself, the whole world opens up to me. But trust wasn't the first skill I needed. What I needed is to have an authentic interaction with myself and to really be okay with my authenticity.
What does that look like, an authentic interaction with yourself?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I was always, and again, you might interpret this as trust, right? But I was always trying to be the good girl. You know, I was trying to be the good girl, and I, for instance, I'll give you an example. My favorite color for most of my life was green. Why? Because my first boyfriend and second grade's color was green. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you liked something and I wanted to be like you, then I would be like you. And again, you might interpret that as trust, but the word trust didn't resonate with me personally.
Uh-huh.
The word authentic was much scarier than trust. Because I had a relationship with God, I thought I kind of trusted, I thought I, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I could rationalize the trust word.
Yes.
But when I had to be authentic, then I interpreted that, Marcia, was that I had to be willing to be my fear of wheel loser.
Uh-huh.
And that was the scariest bejeeber thing in the entire world, and I wanted to slip my wrist, you know, and I wanted to jump out of a plane.
But, I mean, how incredibly freeing to actually get to that place where it's like,
absolutely.
Okay, here's the thing that I fear the worst, and
yes.
I hate the most, and I judge and so forth
yes.
about myself, and
yes.
can I even love and accept that? Can I
yes.
just be that?
Yes, and most people without the... Most people, that is absolutely terrifying. So instead of trying to not be that or be that, what we do is we talk about the wheel of freedom and give them like a little component that supports that unfoldment and say, you know what, Rhonda, you don't have to worry about not doing anything. You just have to worry about practicing being authentic. Okay, I just have to practice that. Okay, great. So I just practice being authentic. And again, scarier than bejeebers. Yet it was something I could hang on to and something that I could, you know, like wave my flag for. And as I started being authentic, I started trusting. I thought, started accessing my passion, started being able to access my dreams, started to even admit that I had a dream, because admitting dreams, as you and I both know, is scary.
Very scary.
Yes.
I just want to go back, and let me just get you guys out there in radio land ready. I'm just going to ask Rhonda one more question, and then we'll open it up for some questions from you guys. And so if you're in a noisy background, you can hit *6. If you're on a cell phone, *6. And then you'll want to make sure you unmute yourself so we can hear you and you can ask a question. So be thinking about what you want to ask. Rhonda, I'm just going to ask you, I took us off on a few different tangents. I just want to go back for a moment to your process. So there's something about first becoming self-aware enough to catch myself in the act doing
yes.
that thing that I do.
Yes, and it's
right.
devastating, as you and I both know, when we start catching ourselves. We think we're worse than we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
although I've developed a sense of humor, I sort of married those two things together, catch myself in the act. Ah, there I go.
But you
would be through a training with me. I'm so transparent. I'm talking about what I'm thinking at the time. And,
but that's wonderful. What a role model.
It's really, really fun. So once we catch ourselves and we can start to recognize the pattern, am I putting a personal practice of some sort in place?
Absolutely.
To try something else?
Absolutely. And that is living on your wheel of freedom. And that's practicing, you know, let's say my word again is authentic, is my essential nature. And then I have proactive behaviors that I've sussed out with my coach or sussed out on paper. And, you know, we talk about that in my book, Fearless Living, or at the Fearless Foundation weekend. And we share with you and show you and guide you to support you in understanding what authentic looks like. Because again, if I'm afraid of being a loser, being authentic is not something I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, coming up with ways on what that looks like. Now, we also have three foundational practices that we use in our work. One is acknowledgments, one is gratitudes, and one is the daily training manual, which is going to be my free gift to your listeners,
wonderful.
You know, to your dream circle. And the DTM, the daily training manual, is a place for everyone to kind of get real and become responsible and accountable. Acknowledgments, and this is a little different. Most people think of acknowledgments a little differently than I do, and gratitude a little differently than I do. So the three things that when you work with a coach or come to Fearless Foundation or read Fearless Living, these are the three things that you got to do no matter what. Acknowledgments are writing down, I acknowledge myself for any change, any movement, any transformation, any new thought, any new behavior, any of those risks. You know, we call them stretch, risk, or dies. And I hear you calling them risks, and I love
with
that.
Stretch, risk, or die?
Yes, we call them stretch, risk, or dies, Marcia.
Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah, because you and I both know some things feel like we're going to die.
Yeah.
And some things are not too scary, but they're scary, but we know we can do them, but we're just kind of nervous to do them. Those are stretches. Risks are, okay, you know, oh, God. But, you know, with some acknowledgments behind our belt, we're going to do it. The dies are literally you feel like you're going to, you know, jump out of your skin. And so your job every day is to write 5 acknowledgments down, 5 stretch, risk, or dies. Where did you even have a new thought? Not even a new action. Forget the action. Did you have a new thought? Did you, if you haven't dated for 15 years, or you haven't even thought of a dream for 15 years, did you even contemplate one today? Not the right one, not the best one, not the good one, not the, you know, the star shining one. Anyone. I'll take any dream. You know, any dating, anything. And the minute you allow a new thought, a minute you allow a new word to, you know, come from your lips, a new behavior, you write it down and go, I acknowledge myself for, and as you and I both know, that is very, very, very difficult for people because they say, I could have done it better. It's not really
right.
good enough. I didn't really do
right.
it, so it doesn't really count. Blah, 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 blah. Second thing is gratitudes. Gratitudes are not about yourself like acknowledgments are. Acknowledgments are all about you. Gratitudes are about someone or something outside of yourself. So I can be grateful for this call with you, Marcia, that you and I are kindred spirits and that you and I, you know, speak the same language and you and I are both freeing people from their fear and you and I are just really allowing people to expand beyond, you know, their limited beliefs about themselves and, you know, touch the stars. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity. And I can acknowledge myself for showing up on the call, you know. And
so
then
I love it because it's a whole other form of catching yourself in the act, only
exactly.
catching yourself and celebrating that you did
yes.
something fabulous.
Yes, yes. Because, you know, bottom line is we catch ourselves doing bad things, you know, quote-unquote negative self-talk all day.
Right.
And we're really good at that. I'd like to try another behavior.
Yes. Absolutely.
And then the third one is the DTM. And the Daily Training Manual is a place for your acknowledgments or a place for your gratitude. It's a place for you to journal. As well as 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I have my coaches do it for 12 weeks and my private clients for 12 weeks. So, again, I urge your dream circles to do it for 12 weeks, your dream circle members. But again, some people can only make it 3 weeks, and hey, more power to you. If I can get you to do a week, even 3 hours a day, more power to you.
And I think we're going to be emailing that out. I think Angie's going to take care of this as a little follow-up gift. Rhonda, let's also, I'm about to open the line, but I want to give people your website. It's www.fearlessliving.org.
Yes.
Fearlessliving.org. You can find out all about Rhonda's programs, her books, and other products. And let's open up the line. So in a moment, I'm going to open the line. If it's not too noisy, we'll keep it open. If you have a question, please jump in right away. Just say your name and where you're calling from and a question or comment that you have for Rhonda. Because if there are no questions, I'm going to put you back in mute mode, and that'll be a missed opportunity. Okay, hang on.
And you're afraid, very afraid.
The line is open. Who has a question for Rhonda?
Hi, Rhonda. This is Debbie in Petaluma, and I was just wondering if you're going to be coming to the Northern California area soon.
I actually am. I'm going to be coming to Sacramento September, in the week of September 17th, I believe. I'm going to be speaking at the in Seattle. I'm going to be speaking in Sacramento. I'm going to be speaking in Los Angeles and San Diego. So there's going to be four opportunities on the West Coast. So I will be in Northern California the third week in September, and you can go to fearlessliving.org for my schedule.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another question for Rhonda. Got the beep, beep, beeps going on. And if you're trying to talk and you've already muted yourself out, Star 6 will unmute you.
Hi, Rhonda. This is Lorraine in Oakland, California. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm very excellent. Thank you so much for asking.
I want to know where the concept for Starting Over came from, because that is, I think, one of the most fabulous shows ever. I loved
it. Thank you, Lauren. Well, hopefully that supported you in finding Marcia and becoming part of her dream circle, you know, giving you the courage, because that's what Starting Over was all about. So Starting Over was actually, there was a woman named Mary Ellis Bunim, and she was one of the executive producers, and she was one of the founders of Bunim Murray Productions, which produced Starting Over. And Mary Ellis Bunim, about 12 years ago now, had a dream there, Marcia, had a dream of about a TV show to empower women. And she basically sat on this idea until the timing was right. And then NBC came to Bunim Murray, who do Real World and Road Rules and all these successful shows for MTV, and said, we want a reality show for daytime. And Mary Ellis Bunim said, I have the perfect show. Mm. And that is how it came to be.
Wow. Yeah, that show was phenomenal. It actually came on at like midnight or very late in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But I watched it every day. I told so many people about it. That's probably what gave me the idea that people can be helped to improve their lives in creative, interesting ways, and I think a lot of people are aware of. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. I really appreciate that comment, because, you know, I had just come back from England. I was on Help Me Rhonda, you know, my own TV show in England for 2 years, and I'd come back to America in, I think, April of that year. And by May, I was already contracted for Starting Over. And it was so exciting, because I actually had two other production deals in the works, and I knew that I wanted to be the first life coach on TV showing the process of change, because, again, I didn't want somebody mediocre or good to do it. I wanted to really, you know, because I love creating exercises, one of my very favorite things. So I just relished the opportunity to really be on the little screen and share, you know, the transformation of other people, and showing the backwards and forwards and sideways that people have to go through to actually change their lives. You know, it was real. Like, it was not scripted. That it was really happening, what you saw. And every 5 minutes that you saw on TV, I probably was with the client an hour and a half. I was in the Starting Over house anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a day to 17 hours a day. I worked 6 days a week, sometimes seven. And everything you saw was actually happening, and it was absolutely magical to be in that place.
Wow, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Another question for Rhonda.
I have a question.
Yes.
I noticed that you had number one as the trigger.
Yes.
I'm sorry, can you say your name?
Your fear. My name is Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you. So I understand the trigger is what that fear is. And then the core negative feelings that are associated were number three. But I missed number two. Or was
number two is fear responses. And yeah, and number four is self-destructive behaviors. It's when we get to that place of the dark night of the soul, when we just, you know, really, you know, go into places that hurt ourselves in a deep way. Mm-hmm. And fear responses are those things that, and it's kind of like one of my coaches says, you know, a fear response, you know, a healthy thing is, you know, one cookie, a fear response, maybe half the bag, and then, you know, a self-destructive behavior is, you know, two packs of cookies.
Right.
You know, so it's the level of intensity and the level of the duration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really where we really believe our core negative feeling. And again, mine is worthless. So when I'm in that place of really believing that's true about me, that's when I give myself permission, you know, obviously, in an unconscious fear-based way to treat myself in a very poor way.
Mm-hmm. So those three things are part of the 10?
Those four things are what is called the wheel of fear. So the trigger, mm-hmm. the fear responses, the core negative feeling, and the self-destructive behaviors are the wheel itself. Those are the four things that make up our wheel of fear. And then there's 10 words for the trigger and 10 words for the core negative feeling that you can uncover in Fearless Living.
Okay.
Does that support you?
Yes, ma'am. Thank
yes.
you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your question. Another question for Rhonda.
Hi, this is...
Oh, we've got two. One and then the other.
Go ahead.
Great. A quick comment from a guy on the line.
Rhonda, and what's your name, Guy?
Where are you calling from?
This is Randy Halavin from San Francisco.
Thank you for speaking up.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a quick comment. This is the first time I've heard somebody with more energy on the line than Marcia, and I thought this was impossible.
Marcia fuels me.
well, thank you. I dipped off the line for just a second to call three other My Dream Circle members and just said, you have got to get on this call.
Oh.
Thank you for that.
How sweet.
Thank you.
Thanks, Randy.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Somebody else had a question or a comment.
This is more Jane.
Hey.
And I agree with the man before. I haven't heard anybody more enthusiastic and bouncy than Marcia before.
We're cut from the same cloth.
and I know that, so I've never been presented with your work before or read anything about it.
Oh, great. Tonight. Congratulations. Yay. Thank you for being here then.
So I have a book I want to write for years, or 3 years.
Can I DJ?
I talk to animals and nature for 15 years as professionally, and they want me to write a book, How to Live a Happy, Fulfilling Life from their point of view.
Yes.
But I know I keep putting it off and I'm not doing it because I have fears that I'm not really aware of. So.
Yes.
I'm hoping that your book, I should start out with the fear one.
Yeah, I would, you know, Fearless Living, and this is the number one comment I receive after somebody reads Fearless Living or after they attend the Fearless Foundation Weekend. The number one comment I get is this: now I understand why I've made every choice I've ever made in my life. I understand why I married this guy, didn't marry this guy, chose this woman, took this job, didn't take this. I mean, everything makes sense because then you start recognizing your life. Like, the filter you look at your life right now, it is not necessarily through fear of freedom. The way you look through your life is, you know, kind of a level, like we all do, you know, it's safety and confusion and, oh, wait, I'm scared, and, you know, all these different voices talking to you. Once you start understanding your fear and freedom, you're going to be able to see the world through that. And what's really, really, really cool is not only will you be able to see yourself, this is the coolest part, you get to see other people's. You'll start recognizing other people's wheel of fear and freedom, and that will open up a whole new level of relationship for you and your loved ones and, you know, and your future fans. Because the book you're talking about, I mean, oh my gosh, all I can think about is, can you write it from a level of a 3 to 5 year old, from a 5 to 12 year old, you know, 8 year old, from an 8 to 12 year old, to a 12 to 16 year old, to a 16 year old, to 25 year old, and then 25. Can I please have all those levels of this conversation, so that
they are so unconditionally loving. I mean, I've I've got to a great place in my life, except for the fear of writing the book.
Well, because it's a big responsibility.
Life, because they reflect that unconditional love in everything they do. I mean, there's no tree out there worrying about what other trees look like, or, you know, if it's the best tree,
It's too busy being itself. Yes, but let me just say something to you, one writer to another, you know.
Okay.
And I know Marcia's experienced this when she's written. I mean, every writer has experienced this at some level. It is an awesome responsibility to be in charge of a pathway to free humankind.
I know.
You know, sweetheart, and I know it. And you are being called to this greatness. Only you. Only you in your unique way. And if you do not fulfill this, the healing of the world will suffer. Sometimes that is the only thing that gets me through sometimes when I'm in my own wheel of fear and I'm wanting to lick my wounds and sit in bed and go, my life sucks and I suck and I, you know, and I'm having my bad day. I sit there and remember, you know what? This is bigger than me. And when you're in your fear, you're in your little, you know, tiny cage of safety. And I understand, it took me 6 months to really own that level of responsibility. And so I'm giving you 6 months from this moment right now. And you have 6 months to fight it, to resist it, to argue with it, to scream at it, to cry at it, to fight it, to do whatever. Because 6 months from now, no more.
That's perfect, because that'll take you right around Thanksgiving. And what a perfect time. And actually what I would suggest is with Rhonda's very, very powerful and highly intentional confronting, calling you forward, that I'll bet it doesn't take you 6 months. There's something about making that kind of agreement. If you're like me, after the first month, I'm like, how long am I going to milk this one?
I've done it for so many years.
And the other thing is that, you know, a lot of us as writers, if you're like, oh, can I really... You know, do I really have something fresh to say? And
right,
you know,
absolutely.
And do I really have a unique way to say it? And
well, I know all those things. I know that I do.
No, you know that, but you don't live it, sweetie girl.
Yeah, I don't live it.
Yeah, so I don't care what your mind says. Forget your mind. Your mind is not your friend right now. Your mind is filled with fear and it's being run by fear. Don't listen to that. You don't know anything, and that's where you got to get to. You know nothing, and you've got to follow instructions right now. You don't think about it. You got to do, not think.
Okay.
So thinking is not doing you any good.
True.
Yeah. You and I both know that, and so does Marcia. And I don't know if Marcia had this experience. When I was writing my book, and when I got my book back from the publishers the first time, you know how they send us that book a month ahead of time, Marcia?
Yeah.
And we freak out.
Yeah.
And I remember that book came in, you know, my assistant goes, oh, here's the first copy of Fearless Living. And I was like, and it was not open. It was, you know, the package from the publisher, and we knew it was the book. And I said, I'm not opening it. My sister goes, well, I'm not opening it. I go, well, I'm not opening it. I'm not opening that. And so she's like, well, you have to open it. You have to open it. And so we sat there for like 10 minutes arguing about who was going to open it and how we didn't want to open it. And I finally slowly opened up the book and I looked at it and I started crying so deeply because I was so afraid. And I said to myself, oh my God, I have to buy every copy of this book possible. You know, how can I get this,
if you get your
book off?
Thank you. Star 6 will close the line. Thanks. I didn't lose you there, Rhonda, right?
No, I didn't.
This is so funny. I mean, for me, when I wrote my first book, I held it that I knew that I had a message, but I wasn't completely crystal clear on it. And I made the decision to use my first book as a correspondence course with God, believing that if there was really a message in me and it was destined to come out, I would be able to sit down and write it. And I will tell you, right now, I'm under deadline. I'm doing one of these small little gift books, through Simple Truths. And it's a dream come true for me because it wasn't a year of a proposal and a year of writing and a year of promoting it. I turned it around very, very quickly, but it's like 30 of my best favorite stories.
Yes.
And it's like my signature stories. And Rhonda, it's an amazing thing because as I'm writing this, it's almost like a swan song.
Mm.
And what it requires for me is what's next. And this emptying out, it's like, okay, here's my best and my favorite and the stories that really illustrate the key points that I've been making in my speaking for the last 20-some-odd, 30 years. And now it's like, okay, well, what's next?
Yes.
And I can relate to fear because I'm feeling pretty terrified.
Yeah.
Days where I feel blissed out about it.
Yeah.
Like really free, like, oh my gosh, I'm really in this creation process.
Yeah.
And I have other days with, what am I thinking?
Yes. What are you thinking? And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, you said something very poignant. You said, you know, I had a correspondence course with God, and I know if I had that idea that it was kind of yours to do, so to speak. And, you know, I had that same similar feeling, and I know this young lady who was speaking to us has that same similar feeling. And, you know, let's just put it this way. I hired somebody, and I'm not even joking for everyone on the line who's ever wanted to do something bold and big. And I know if you're in the dream circle, that's all of you. You know, bottom line is one of the tenets of fearless living is no one can be fearless alone, which is why the dream circle and my fearbuster groups and you know, community is very, very important as we're trying to move beyond our fear-based thinking. And I hired somebody, and I really want you to hear this, I hired somebody to sit next to me to get me to write to my first book. If I hadn't hired somebody to sit next to me, that book would never have been written. I was too afraid.
What did they actually do?
What they did is it was a friend of a friend of a friend who had been had written a book already. She was the only published author I knew, and you know, she was helping people with proposals, and so I hired her to sit next to me, and basically I would be writing on my computer, she would sit next to me, I would print out as I was writing, she would read it as I was writing, and she would go, "Oh, tell me more about this." And the story would go on like this. "Well, nobody cares about that. I was just writing that down, but I'm not gonna talk about that in the book." She goes, No, I really like that part." I go, "Yeah, well, that's not interesting. Nobody wants that. I'm not interested in writing that." "No, Rhonda, this is the part I want. Tell me about this." And I would go, "Well, okay, but it's a waste of time, but okay." And I would start talking, and she'd go, write that down right now. And that's how I wrote the first book.
Or just a friend or a little of both?
Oh, no, I paid her. She was not a friend. I mean, she's a friend now, but she definitely wasn't a friend. It was somebody, a professional that I paid to sit next to me.
Well, it goes back to what you and I both teach. There really is power in having someone supportively holding you accountable for doing the things that you need to do in order to get what you're saying you really want to get.
Yes. Yeah.
So we have time maybe for one more question. Anything else you want to ask Rhonda? Good, I'll ask. Rhonda, just in our last couple of minutes, can you please talk a little bit about fearless loving?
Fearless loving, boy. You know, fearless loving is a way to walk in the world. You know, once you understand how your fear mechanism works, fearless loving gives you an expanded view of what freedom could look like. And one of the main tenets in fearless loving is seeing the world as innocent, seeing others as innocent, seeing yourself as innocent. So it gives you a whole new place to have compassion. Not empathy, not pity, but compassion. Very, very different feel, very, very different energetic, a very different way to live your life. Because when you're compassionate, there's a gentleness, there's a patience, there's an opening, there's an expansiveness that naturally happens. So in there, I talk about innocent communication and, you know, how to see the world as innocent and, you know, what it takes to see the world as innocent and, you know, many other things about love itself. So it's about, there's a chapter on dating for those dating folks. The whole book is about, you know, expanding your own love of self as well as love in your family, friends, and relationships, your intimate relationship. And again, like I said, there's one chapter in there for dating for all those folks that haven't dated for 15 years, you know, or 20 years or 5 years or 3 years and are, you know, scared of bejeebers. And so I have a real lovely way to support you in expanding in that love arena. Again, whether that's love of self, whether that's love of others, and not only giving, but also receiving, because receiving is something we don't do as a human race. We give love and believe that it should naturally be, you know, reciprocated, but when it's reciprocated, we don't receive it. So we never actually feel loved, which this is one of the humorous things about the Wheel of Fear, Marcia. When people live on their Wheel of Fear, they never believe they're loved anyway because they know they're not being authentic or trusting or being true to themselves. So when somebody says they love you, all they say is, "Well, wait, just wait," or "They don't really know me," or, you know, or throw it off in some other way. So when
what's a simple practice that we can take forward to have us know ourselves as love and as loving beings? So when that sort of habitual pattern does kick in and just pulls me out, What can I do in the moment to reconnect to what's the deeper truth?
Yes. Well, I'm going to go back to the exercise we've discussed already a little bit, which is acknowledgments.
Yeah.
You know, acknowledgments are a huge anchor point, and an integration tool. And, you know, people come back, you know, years later, like maybe they, you know, fiddled around in Fearless Living or, you know, maybe hired me for a couple months and then quit and, you know, thought they were all done and complete and, you know, and that could be true sometimes. And sometimes 2 or 3 years later, 5 years later, they'll come back and go, you know, I just need a, you know, something's wrong in my life. First question I ask always is, are you doing your gratitudes and acknowledgments? Are you doing the DTM? Because if you're not doing the daily training manual, and specifically if you're not doing the acknowledgments and gratitudes, those are those things that anchor you. Those are the things that remind you of the truth. And if you're not doing your daily practices, you know, you're going to get rusty and you're going to start getting into your past behaviors of safety, you know, less risk and, you know, moving into your fear zone. So acknowledgments, how can, you know, when you're in that place of fear, how can you move into that gentle place of acknowledging yourself for just even being willing to even admit that you're afraid or admit that you're, you know, just look at yourself and go, wow, I'm being so hard on myself. You know, one of the things that I teach in my coaching program and teach the coaches to work with their clients about is the minute fear comes up, you get to go, ah, there you are, old friend. You're trying to keep me safe. I so appreciate it. Thank you so much for loving me. And you know what? I've got it. I'm practicing being fearless. I'm discovering who I am. I'm willing to be who I am. I'm becoming who I am. And therefore, thank you so much for the advice. Don't need it right now.
But you're right. It's shifting an entire relationship.
Yes.
Speaking of which, our hour has flown by. Rhonda, I want to give you in this last minute before we lose everybody, anything that you want to say in terms of sending people to your website or any just final words of brilliance. Let me first say thank you for your incredible
generosity.
I loved having this time with you.
Oh, thank you. And I the same. I just love what you're doing, and I just love what your work. I love your spirit. You know, like the minute we met, I felt kindred and have to get together and connect more. And, you know, I love the work we're doing, and fear is the only culprit you have. So if you're sitting there not writing your book, if you're not sitting there going for your dreams, you know, use Marshall's tools, use my tours, get in the dream circle, you know, embrace it, know it, you know, join a Fear Buster group, take the Fearless Foundation Weekend, whatever's going to support you, whatever tool you're called to, whatever that looks like. But, you know, do something for your soul, do something for yourself, do something for your fearless self. And I'm knowing that, you know, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, a year from now, who you are, you can't even imagine who you could be.
FearlessLiving.org, Rhonda Britton, a true fearless living embodiment. And I'm just going to echo Rhonda's words and say thank you to everyone on the call, whether you're listening to this live or as a download. Thanks for carving an hour out of your incredibly busy life. And remember, do something, as Rhonda says, and I will echo and punctuate, do something today to demonstrate you're more committed to your dream than you are to your fear. Action on your dreams. Thanks, everybody. Thanks so much, Rhonda. Much love.
Thank you, Marcia. Much love.
Bye-bye.